Okay, so obviously with running like a million-dollar software business, you're going to have more support. One thing with software is there's going to be more support than probably an info product business.
This is Superfast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Now, and I've got on the line today my favorite designer in the entire world, all the way from Sheffield, James Dyson. Welcome.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
Good. This is quite a monster that you helped me design here with the internet marketing speed.
Yeah, you're going back a couple of years maybe now, but it's the design's still holding strong.
One thing that I've discovered with my websites when I look at the analytics is that the websites that you've helped me design are getting a very high repeat visit rate. And I think moving forward with the way that there are changes on the internet towards quality and user experience, I think that's a pleasing sign. So examples of sites like Traffic Grab, which in the, you know, a few years ago would have been classed as a sales page site where you'd expect the majority of traffic to come once and then never come back. That's what the gurus taught us. You know, grab people now because they'll never revisit. But the reality is that more than half the people coming to that site are coming back and revisiting. And that's the same across my Fast Web Formula and Silver Circle and Internet Marketing Speed. Of course, people are coming back all the time because we keep putting podcasts. But how do you see the market changing with design? Because design is really your initial success story with internet marketing. What's happening out there in the market in design terms?
I think exactly what you say. It's funny when you say that, really, because we've talked about it a lot over the course of the past few years. And it is going more, you know, if you really want to build a strong brand in internet marketing or pretty much any market now, just having one of those standard sales pages, like you say, with minimal or no graphics on it, it's not got any kind of real value to the customer if they don't like what they're seeing. Whereas what we're seeing in a lot of, the bigger companies that are breaking out of sort of internet marketing into other spaces, like say 37 Signals with their Basecamp product, what they're building is more of a content site. So you've got navigation at the top and you've got nice graphics combined with that, which really gives a valuable experience that people are going to come back to rather than these single page sales letters, which really don't offer anything of value. And Google's noticing this too. We're seeing more and more sites ranking higher with Google because they look better. So I think it's the graphics is becoming more and more of an important part of any kind of internet marketing or online business.
Now, what I wanted to talk about today is something that is right on topic for this. About a year ago, you came to my Fast Web Formula 2 live event. You dropped a bombshell of tested design data on the audience. You gave them all of the high converting graphics and ways to lay out. And then what you did is you bundled all of those things together into a WordPress platform and you called it Optimize Press. Now, how's that gone for you over the last year?
Yeah, well, as you say, I was working on Optimize Press when I was preparing to come to Fast Web Formula 2. And we planned to actually launch it around the time that I was at your event. But as with many things, you know, it got pushed back slightly, but we did mention it at Fast Web Formula. And basically it was all about how this system that I put together takes what I've learned from my experience as a designer for internet marketing and my experience working with sort of clients of my own and worked out what was working and put this into this WordPress platform. So we launched soon after I returned from Australia in, I think it was September of last year. And to date, we've done over $1 million in sales. So that's
wow.
In 12
and
months.
And just for the listener, we're recording this in August,
yes,
2011. So this is actually, in less than 12 months, you've generated over $1 million in sales.
Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I think the real story here is how you went from being a school kid to designer to software mogul, because I've known you for, well, you're so young, I've known you for half your life. But
yeah,
in all seriousness, I think I've known you for around about 5 years now.
Yeah.
And you used to be hanging out in the Warrior Forum making mini site studio templates. So I think the real story here is, how does someone go from being one technician, you know, one specialist sitting there with a computer at home in the spare bedroom to running a software empire? What are the steps that you went through? How did this happen?
Okay, well, I guess the first thing and the most probably important thing for anyone thinking about, you know, moving into this area is basically that you've got to have something which, you know, if you've got an experience in a market, you know, something that's working, putting it into some kind of a system is really, you know, if you can package everything you know. I was building these sites for people and I was seeing what was converting. I thought, well, wait a minute, why couldn't I take these designs, put them into some kind of a system, which then can be almost like automated, and then sell this rather than doing custom designs for people at like 100, 200, 300 bucks a pop. I could sell this system and I could basically sell this many times over with no extra work from myself once the thing's created. So I basically took my ideas, leveraged that, and I mean it was tricky at first because I had to go through all this of how do you start this thing, but I found a programmer and we developed the software, launched it, and as you say, it's done really well. But I think many people kind of underestimate, they think that if they're not a programmer they can't create software, and that's the biggest hold up for many people, I think, before they even consider that sort of route as either a business on its own or as a revenue stream for an existing business. Because I think that's something that many people don't realize. If they've got a successful info product business or they've got a successful consulting business, they could potentially take a lot of what they know and create a solution out of that in the form of a software product.
Right. So, I mean, it does make sense because we wouldn't expect that someone thinks they should work at McDonald's or run a McDonald's store because they're a fantastic chef.
Yeah.
They own a McDonald's store because of the business system. And that's where a lot of people get caught up. Would you say that perhaps being a super duper programmer could almost make it more difficult to be a marketer?
Yeah, I would definitely say so, because, you know, it's not just about the programming. You need the combination. And I think, you know, I had some experience in marketing, but I didn't know anything about programming. And I think you want that distance. You don't really want, you know, a lot of programmers are great programmers, but they don't know how to market this thing and they don't really see the potential of, you know, what they're creating. So it's probably a disadvantage if you're a programmer, to be honest with you.
Okay, now on the flip side of that, James, there's been a lot of courses out in the last 6 months that are, you know, quite expensive, and they teach that anyone can go out and basically have global domination in the iPhone App Store and stuff. Like, yeah. How realistic is that based on your own experience? And just to preface that, you had an online software web builder thing before the Optimized Press. From memory, you had some sort of cover creator or
yeah, that was a separate system. Product, but yeah, I did have something else out there.
Like, was there a learning curve is really the question.
Yeah, I mean, there is somewhat of a learning curve, but I think if you know what you want to create, you know, it's basically three kinds of apps, sort of products you can create in form of a software. You can do like a web app, which is something like Basecamp, where it's web-based, people log into it, and they're normally sort of subscription-based services. Then you can create downloadable apps, which is something like, I mean, Optimized Press, although it's on the web, it's kind of downloadable and then you install it on your own site. So I class that as a downloadable app. Or you can do these mobile phone and, you know, iPhone apps and things like that, which there's been a lot of talk about. And, you know, I've not got a lot of personal experience in that market, so I wouldn't want to say too much about how difficult it is to get into that market. But I think in terms of creating a product for, you know, your market or, you know, whoever, whatever market you're in, it's a case of, if you look at what else is out there, I mean, what I always say to people is, you know, firstly, go out and see what else is in your market. So are there a lot of people already creating software that does exactly what you're thinking of doing? And if so, you could still go into that market, but you kind of need to look. One of the things I always say is look and see if there's one main competitor. And if there's one company that's doing it better than anyone else, then, you know, you might be tough to come up against that. But if you've got kind of a few companies doing different things, but nothing really stands out, then you could still go into that market and you could build something that's, that, you know, takes the lead in that market, which is kind of what Optimized Press has done. Although, you know, I do have sort of probably 6 or 7 competitors. Some have been released since I've launched Optimized Press and some were around before. But I think if you can look at their software and say, right, well, how can I improve this? So how can I take my own knowledge? Or, you know, how can I look at it and say, right, well, the design of it sucks. So that's one thing you can improve. Is it hard to use? So you look at areas where they're weak, and if you can improve on them and you can do the, you can back it up with the marketing that goes with it, then you can still launch software in pretty much any market, I think.
Yeah, this is very good advice. I mean, you've chosen a super popular platform to launch on. I like your software model, and I think there's a lot that we can learn from this. Tell me what sort of phases that you go through, if you were to sort of jot them down. Are there a few, you know, have you got a system for software development now that you've been through the process?
For actually creating a new software product?
Yeah. Where do you start?
Okay, so I would guess the first thing would be, obviously, as I've said, you would look at what's already being sold in your market. So if you haven't got an initial idea for a product, look at what else is being sold in your market. So are people building kind of like automation tools? For example, the short sales market is quite a hot market, very popular. You know, there's tools in that market that automate the process. They give the customer, the user, basically like an interface for managing all their short sales, you know, all their contracts, all their clients and everything in one place. You know, it's a pretty simple idea, but you've got to take kind of what people are doing offline in that case. So they've got all the, you know, all this paperwork that they're trying to manage. If you can put that into some kind of online system where it centralizes everything, you know, that's a pretty good tool. And I'm sure, you know, there's people in that market that are doing, you know, fantastic with the software that they're selling. So look at what's selling in your market already. So you can look on marketplaces like ClickBank. You can look on the Apple App Store. It's another one to look at. Obviously, search Google and see what's, you know, looking at already sort of selling in your market for a start. And as I say, look if there's one central main company that's sort of everyone's talking about. If that's the case, then it may be something you want to think about twice. If you don't have an idea for software products at all, you can also basically look at, there's kind of three things you can look at. So you can look at what you can automate in your business. So what could you automate and put into a system that can be created as a software product, whether that's like a dashboard type interface where it manages different things like the short sale thing, or whether that's something that kind of takes a system, say like interfaces with Google to search the internet. So if you look at something like Market Samurai, which basically essentially just pulls in features from the Google API and organizes them for you. I mean, it's a fantastic system, and I'm sure many of your listeners use Market Samurai. But it's simple in really what it does, because it's just pulling things in and centralizing them for you. So can you do something like that in with what you know? And obviously leverage on the knowledge and experience and your own problems in that market. So if there's a problem that you've had with a particular thing, you know, whether it's in the case of my market, people have always been struggling to create squeeze pages and sales pages, you know, especially within WordPress. So that solved that immediate problem. Obviously, as I've said, look at what's already being done. You know, that's a great one. See what else has been done and what can you improve on there. And also look at systems in your own business. So if you've got a system that you've developed for, say, outsourcing, could you put that into some kind of management system or a script? So that's the way to start off. I mean, once you've got that idea, you're going to obviously have to think of a brand for your product, and the brand's pretty important. I mean, I could talk all day about branding, pretty much like I did last year at Fast Web Formula 2, but you know, the brand is very important. You need to come up with a name. And I actually have like a naming blueprint that I use to actually come up with names for my products. And that's like a system that I've developed, I suppose, in my own business. Once you've got the brand, then you actually need to go about creating the software. So you basically need to look at essentially initially what you're going to include in the software. So there's certain things that you always need to build into the software. Well, this is something based on what I've now found out from running Optimized Press and my experience with, you know, other products that I've handled, there's certain things that are going to help you if you build them into the product initially. So, for example, things like building support into your product is something that most people forget about. So things like tooltips, when you've got an interface there, having a little tooltip that pops up and says, this is what this does, that's really cool. It builds a lot of support into the product. And one thing we're doing with our products going forward is we're actually building sort of short videos into the product to actually help people along the way without them having to go to a separate support site for, you know, learning how to use the product. So you've essentially, at that point, you've got the framework for your product, and you obviously know what the product's going to be about. The next thing you need to do is actually go about building the thing. So you need to have like a software plan. So you need to plan out, you know, you need to look at how to plan out the system, as far as there's certain steps like wireframing your products and the interface, which you may have a designer for. But sometimes if you know the idea in your head, you probably want to go through that with your programmer or designer to actually wireframe it, which is basically planning out the framework of the system.
And so we also wireframe means what it looks like, right?
Yeah, essentially it's a combination of just a blank page with boxes that say logo will go here, this feature goes here, this feature goes here. And that's something you don't necessarily have to get involved with that. But normally if you've got an idea of how something is going to work, you want to be involved with the developers at that stage.
Yeah, I found the more detail you put early, the cheaper and faster it will be to produce.
Yes, yeah, and this is one thing that I also, you know, this is one thing that I've talked about with clients, is there's different development models you can look at. So you can look at sort of partnering with a programmer, which is essentially, you say, bringing an idea to a programmer and basically saying, look, you'll put in your development time, I'll put in my marketing expertise and the idea, and then you'll split. And there's advantages to that. Obviously, they've got more invested in the project, but it can also mean, you know, it's less money for you. Or you can outsource, and there's either you can outsource locally, which means you've got more direct contact with the developers, or you can outsource overseas. And these things all have an impact on how you can plan out your project, and something that I could talk about that all day, really.
Well, but you will talk about it. I know that you're flying over to Australia to talk about your entire software system at FastWeb Formula 3, but what I'd like to do on this call is perhaps just ask a few questions that may be on the mind of our listener, but perhaps and not obvious.
Sure.
You ready?
I'm open.
Okay, firstly, did you have to have any investors to start this business?
No investors. It was literally myself. I mean, I did have a small amount of capital to invest in, obviously, hiring the programmer initially, but, you know, you can get a lot built pretty cheaply, really, with the outsourcing sites that are out there. I know you talk a lot about outsourcing to the Philippines, which is where my original programmer was. And, you know, you can have someone full time there for probably, for a developer, maybe you're looking at more than sort of a VA, but, you know, $500 to $1,000 a month for a full-time developer. And if you're creating something relatively simple, you could probably have it done in, you know, a month to 2 months if you're really on top of it. I mean, that outsourcing overseas does mean you've probably got to do a bit more of the project management yourself. So you're going to have to guide that person more than probably someone outsourced locally, depending on their expertise, obviously. But so you're going to handle a bit more of it. But essentially, you don't need a big upfront cost. And I would say you're not going to need investors unless you've got absolutely zero money upfront, you know.
Okay. Now, one of the other big things that sort of comes to mind is, how big is your team now in your business? You used to be just James sitting at the desk there. What does it look like now?
Okay, so obviously with running like a million-dollar software business, you're going to have more support. One thing with software is there's going to be more support than probably an info product business. But at the same time, you're probably going to generate more with a software product than you will from an info product business, I think, long term. And also it's relative, you know, it doesn't start off with loads of support. So my team now is essentially myself. I have a local support person in the UK. I also have a support person in the Philippines, and then we have basically one developer, but we're actually switching to a new development team. But essentially, we have one developer at the moment who works on OptimizePress.
Right, so it's a pretty small team for the amount of turnover.
Yeah, it's a very small team, and the people in the Philippines, you know, are their salaries really are negligible. So it's not a huge investment, and the profits are still way up from what we're actually spending on our team.
Yeah, well, I know in my old industry, the KPI or the key performance indicator was $1 million in sales revenue per employee. The only thing being, though, that the average profit margin in that industry was about 2%. So you've got a high profitability per person ratio there.
Yeah.
You know, you've mentioned an example before of Market Samurai. Now, you've piggybacked the WordPress platform. Market Samurai, I guess, is having to hook into Google.
Yeah.
This must be a huge consideration, you know, what you hitch your wagon to. Because I imagine every time there's an update or a change, that is going to immediately mean that you have, changes. You've got to invest in updating and keeping the software thing. And I think that's where a lot of the would-be clones come into the market and then they disappear again at the next update because they can't sustain it. How big an issue is this?
I think it is certainly a concern. It's certainly a consideration. I wouldn't say it's a concern, but it's a consideration. I mean, there's massive benefits to me piggybacking essentially on the back of WordPress, because you're leveraging their audience of, you know, tens of millions, if not, you know, more than that now. I don't know their user numbers, but their user base is huge. And I think by leveraging on top of that, you're kind of borrowing some of their credibility immediately. And you're also, with my software, you know, people already have sites built in WordPress, so they can just switch over to this WordPress platform with OptimizePress. And essentially, they're already used to a lot of the interface, so you're cutting down on that learning curve with people for the most part. So it can be a good and a bad thing. And I think the way that I look at it is really, once you get to that point, obviously we've always had, since we launched, a full-time programmer, but it wouldn't have to be full-time, you know, all the time to start with. And as long as you've got that person on hand, they can normally, you know, get stuff remedied pretty quickly, because we actually know about WordPress updates ahead of them coming out normally. And it's the same with most companies. They'll actually advise people if they're making something. When they know people are building on their system, they will actually advise you. And there's actually developer sites that you can log into to be aware of this stuff before it comes out. So we test like the beta versions of WordPress before it's actually released to the public. So we pretty much know we can launch a little update just before they launch, and you know, we don't have any issues, or the issues are minimal, and we can normally iron them out within the first week of a new launch sort of version being out.
So I guess it depends on how often the platform you're based on changes as well.
Yeah, I think you don't want to be basing it on some platform that no one's really heard of and that's pretty much in their, you know, infancy. But I think with there's so many different companies and software solutions out there that have APIs that you can connect into, you've just got to look at where you're going to be best spent putting your development time. If you're going to hook into another system, what system are majority of people working with? So what's going to have the biggest impact on, you know, your user base? So if you hook into a system that's got a user base of 10 million people, that's going to have potentially opening your software up to that market of people straight away.
Just picture yourself back there designing mini sites for $100 to now.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, you've just put over $1 million through your shopping cart. Did you have to change the way that you think about business? Was there a mindset shift that people could be inspired from?
There is a shift, and I think it's realizing that you can leverage that knowledge you have to create something more than, you know, you alone sort of thing. And it is hard to disconnect from that. One thing that I found was hardest was, because I was running a service business, it was very hard to say, right, look, I've got to actually scale this down to put time into this other project.
Yeah, I call that swinging from the trees. You have to let go of one tree to swing to the next one.
You totally do. And it was one thing, I did stop things for kind of a couple of months. And it's hard when you've got regular clients and things, you have to scale down things. And I would never say to someone, just cut it out altogether, because you don't know, you know, it's never a guaranteed thing going into something new. And, you know, you've got to stop people switching between things. I would never say just switch to software and then switch to something else. But if you're if you see the potential in this software business, then you do have to put your time into putting the groundwork down for it. And once I kind of grasped that, I saw like massive progress for the whole thing.
I think it's good. You have to have some sort of risk reward ratio. And sometimes, I mean, I did that. I swung from a full-time job to an online business.
Yeah.
It was risky at the time. However, it paid off really well. And quite often I'll just trim back time on one project to start ramping up the next one. And I've created some pretty decent sized businesses just by turning off client work, turning off coaching, turning off every other activity just to focus on the next thing.
You've got to be passionate about this. I think you have to, it was something I really wanted to create and I saw the potential in it. And once you've got that passion for it, I think that's a massive driving force. And you've also got to think about what's going to make you the most money, because people always are flicking between things. Whereas you should really look at, if you've got four or five potential business models or things that you're switching between, you've got to look at what's going to make you the most money and what you're the most passionate about, and go with that. Because if not, you're just going to be switching between things forever. And that sort of, you're just on a wheel, you're just spinning around and you're not actually getting anywhere.
Yeah, well, you must have at some point said, I'm going to switch from selling my time to creating a business that works without me.
Yeah.
Did you have any early on influences that guided you in that direction?
Well, I mean, it started slowly. If you remember way back when you were selling as an affiliate, you were creating products for a certain other platform that was like a website building platform, and we created some templates together. And I guess that kind of formed some of the foundation, because we saw the potential there that you could sell these templates with not too much effort, and because with software, one thing is that it's, if you've got the solution, if someone's just looking for the, they've got, the need to build a squeeze page, for example, if I've got this software there that says, right, it's going to build a squeeze page that looks like this, it's not like an info product where it doesn't always, it's not immediately obvious that it answers your question. With software, you don't actually have to really hard sell it, because it sells itself. It's right there. It's obvious to people. This is what it does, and there's no doubting it. So as long as it does what it says, that's really one of the most powerful things, I think, with software, that you don't have to sit and write like a massive sales page.
With the interesting point with that scenario was, you already had the templates.
Yeah.
And I approached you and asked you if we could distribute them, create them for that particular software, knowing there was a captive audience, like tens of thousands of users of that software. So that's probably optimized press alpha. I'll take full responsibility.
It's all down to you, James. What can I say?
Okay, now two questions and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you, what was the thing that shocked you or surprised you the most, or that you found the most completely surprising compared to what you expected in this journey over the last year?
Okay, I guess one thing was the support. Once things do start scaling up, the support is one thing you will notice. But we've actually built systems in our business now which actually reduce support before it even becomes a ticket. So we've actually built systems into both our software, like the tooltip things and things that we're building with video tutorials built in, to actually reduce that before it gets to the point where someone actually has to say, right, I need to open a ticket for this. So we've actually learned from that. And although it was a bigger shock initially, I think we've learned from that, and we've actually built a system now where we know if we launched another piece of software, what we'd have in place before we even started, that would actually mean we'd get minimal amount of support compared to what we would have when we first launched Optimize Press.
Right, and I imagine you can probably leverage your current support infrastructure with add-on products to
exactly.
Related markets.
I mean, I think the help desk thing's a huge thing, and most people sort of have a basic help desk, but there's a lot more you can do with a help desk to actually really help manage a software business as a whole. And you can certainly scale that up. So if you had another business in the mix or another software product, you can already take that infrastructure, as you say, and just apply it to that business.
We run about a dozen businesses from Superfast Help. It's it's very easy to just, and you can manage them all separately. Now, my second question is, it's going to be a weird one, so work with me here. I imagine someone listening to this call all the way to now is interested in this business model. They're fascinated by what you've said. the normal response from my observation in the internet marketing space is, well, I'll just go and get a programmer and create a WordPress sales letter template, right? Now, I think that would be a dumb strategy because it's obvious that you've come into the market and just owned it. You've got the biggest people supporting your product. I know I was probably the first person to promote the product because I saw everything you did prior to that and what you've done for my brand. And then since then, other people have figured out that James Dyson makes the most amazing software. You know, you've incorporated video players and all sorts of amazing stuff. So I suggest that they look at some other type of thing. But what would you be sticking your focus on? If you're listening to the call and you didn't already have Optimized Press, how would you take what we've talked about and channel it into something that could be really profitable that's not already saturated?
Yeah, good question. I think you basically just need to look, go over the stuff that I've talked about on the call already, because that's really the formula that, you know, I do use. And I think there's so many different ideas out there. You know, there are a lot of copycats. And I always think, you know, yeah, you could just copy another idea, but really you need to make it your own. And you need to take these sort of these systems that I've talked about as far as, you know, looking at what's already selling and really come up with something on your own that's going to be, it doesn't have to be unique, but you need to have a unique angle to it. And that's something that I always try to do. There was already products out there with Optimized Press before Optimized Press came out that did some of the similar stuff, but we took a unique angle. We made it look better than everyone else as we added, you know, impressive graphics and stuff, and just took a few things that no one else was doing, plugged them into the system. And really, I think that combined with having a great support framework for your business, you know, we get a lot of great comments for our support because our competitors just couldn't keep up and they could really offer the same standard. So you just got to look at where you can outdo your competitors and, you know, and go from there, really.
One thing I think you've done way better than many people is you've taken a high brand value approach to this. You're not like that university student who's pot-shotting a cheap script out there in forums, you know, with lack of support. You've built this as a seven-figure business from day one. And that's that's why I think it is a seven-figure business now, because you always had that high quality standard. And I, you know, that's why you're such a good designer. I'm sure you still are a designer, but you know, the brand value that you bring. I mean, in my case, I've been so blessed to be able to give you a domain name that I've bought, and then you actually build a brand around that, like you did with Traffic Grab, for example. It's just amazing. So I think we're going to wrap it up there, James. Again, it's always so exciting listening to this. I'm just watching your transition now, and I'm sure it won't be long till you add on some extra dimension to this and have your first eight-figure year. So keep up the great work. For listeners interested in Optimized Press, I always offer a bonus. One of the best bonuses you could ever imagine is if you order Optimized Press from my website, and I'll put a link to buywithbonus.com, you can actually get the James Dyson Fast Web Formula 2 presentation in a streaming membership area as my free bonus just for buying Optimized Press through our website. So go to buywithbonus.com. James, I'm really looking forward to catching up with you at Fast Web Formula 3, and I'm sure the audience are going to be stunned with what you're about to share with them at that event.
I can't wait for it, James. It's going to be awesome.
Discover how to build your business super fast. Check out superfastbusiness.com.